Okay, our next case is 13P1806, Glycamp versus Wedge.
Good morning, Your Honor. My name is George Seslak, and I represent the appellants, Dr. Kaulbach and Dr. Glycamp. As you know, this matter arises out of a motor vehicle accident in which one of my clients is seriously injured. Sued the bodily injury claim and settled that claim for $20,000, and then was looking to pursue an underinsured motorist claim against his own insurer, at which point in time he found out the existence of underinsured coverage, and he knew nothing about that. This lawsuit was ended, essentially, at the Superior Court by the judge who allowed the defendant's motion for summary judgment. We believe it's an error in doing that. It's a basic appeal here, judges, is that this is a question of fact that should have been presented to a jury. It was beyond the authority of the judge to make the rulings that he did in dismissing this account.
And what's your best case or comparative theory in law for that point with regard to this sort of claim?
Just the law is that if there's special circumstances, that I think we all agree that's the one exemption to this, the general theory that an insurer or an agent doesn't have the obligation to inform his client unless there are special circumstances. In the case of an acute case, stands for the position that if someone's alleging special circumstances, that has to be decided. It's a question of fact for the jury. And the trial judge, the motion judge, in his order, went on to cite several examples where he agreed the facts support opposition to special circumstances.
For special circumstances, don't you need specific assertions or representations concerning the adequacy or sufficiency of coverage made to an insured and reliance on those?
I believe the law is that you need specific assurances, representation. I think we have that, not so much just as to the underinsured motorist coverage. That's the crux of the case. They never made any comments on that. They never said anything about that. But the overall, that USAA took the position that we're going to make sure you're fully and adequately covered, and they went out of their way to go out.
So if an insurance company puts an ad, insure with us, we take care of all your needs, that's a specific assurance or representation?
No, I would say not by that. This case involves much more than that, Your Honor. That USAA.
But what specifically in the record here would support the view that there, in the light most favorable to your client, that there were specific assertions or representations concerning the adequacy of their automobile coverage?
Well, again, they sent a number of letters to my client saying that's our goal, to make sure you're fully and adequately covered. On several occasions, my client said when she spoke with USAA, she'd end every phone call saying, is there anything else I need? Am I covered fully? And they would always tell her yes. And they would come out and tell her, you know, we think that you need more insurance coverage on your homeowners. And she would do that. We think you need to do something on your auto liability, on your BI coverage. We think you should get an umbrella policy. So she's sitting back and they're telling her, this is what you need to be fully covered. So she assumed and relied upon this, saying that, well, if you're looking out for my best interest as it pertains to my homeowners policy, as it pertains to my auto BI coverage, as it pertains to the towing, and the property damage, and umbrella coverage, I'm assuming that they're going to look out for my best interest as well as far as tell me what underinsured motorist coverage is. And they had $1 million umbrella, $500,000 BI, they had all kinds of policies with them. They'd been with this company for over 20 years, and they went out of their way. They proactively went out and contacted my clients every other year or thereabouts and said it's time for us to do an appraisal in your house to make sure that it's adequately insured.
If you're making a claim on homeowners insurance, I get you, okay? But this is an automobile.
Right, but it seems illogical to me that they can rely upon, it's the same carrier, they can rely upon the carrier to be looking out for the best interest for only homeowners but not for auto. I mean, it's the same carrier. They've been there for 20 years, and they were actually looking out for the best interest, supposedly, when they told them, look, you don't need to have $500,000 in BI coverage. Reduce that down to $100,000, $300,000, get an umbrella policy, you increase your coverage, and you reduce your premiums. That dealt specifically with the auto policy.
Is there no obligation on the insured to understand what coverage they have? Look at the policy, read the coverage language. In Massachusetts, we have a standard policy that has to be approved by the insurance commissioner, and that policy over the years has they've struggled and strived to make it more and more understandable to the average person just what these coverages consist of. So reading the section on underinsured coverage, certainly you don't need a medical degree to be able to read that and understand what it insures if you want it. You agree?
Well, I agree that they have information there. They could have, if they've sought out that information, they could have learned what underinsured motorist coverage is, but the cases, at least one case I cited, said that insurance issues of this sort can be complex, and it's reasonable for a client to rely upon their agent or their insurance company to give them some advice.
Well, don't gloss over that distinction that quickly. Isn't there a distinction in law between the duties of an agent and the duties of a direct carrier?
I don't think there is. That's been made mention in this, but one of the judges in the case said, you know, every time we've had this kind of ruling, it's always been with an agent, and that's not true. I mean, the McHugh case involves a direct employee of Prudential Insurance Company, who's a licensed agent, the same as we have here in USAA, and every case goes into it. Even if they said there was just an agent involved or direct insurer involved, they would go into it.
And there were much stronger representations made in the McHugh case, too.
I respectfully disagree. I think that USAA, in this case, did a lot more. I had a lot more interaction with our clients and told them, look, we're there for you. You know, we're going to come out and make sure you're fully covered.
McHugh, you have to see, do more specific representations.
On one point, I would say, yes.
On a critical point.
Yes. But again, that's the point that we're making, that they can't have made any kind of representation under insured motorist coverage, because we're saying that's the whole based on our claim, that they never made any kind of representations, they never said anything about it, they ignored it. They went out and sent letters saying you should increase your bodily injury coverage, you should consider this, you should consider that. Never once did they say, you know, you're spending all this money, all this coverage, do something under insured motorist coverage. We're there to tell you you're going to be fully protected, and they didn't do it.
Does the record reflect any questions by your clients as to what this underinsured coverage is and should we have it?
No, she was ignorant of the fact. All she did was ask at the end of her phone calls, is there anything else we should have? And they said no. Repeatedly. She did all conversations that way. So that, I think, satisfies that. And the fact that they made recommendations on another different type of coverage is part of the case law, so that's considered insurance assertions. And it's clearly reliance in this case. So we just think that the judge found that the long-term history supported our claim. He said that the fact that we had correspondence back and forth with USAA in which they gave certain recommendations, that supports our claim. But then he said, I don't give much weight to that. And I respectfully say that's not his job to weigh that evidence. And then he acknowledged that my client did talk to USAA and would always ask if there's anything more that I should do to have the coverage. And he discounted that, saying, well, it's just too vague, too general.
Is there a distinction in the case law between an entity who gets paid for giving advice and an entity that gets paid for selling a product?
I think this case law says that if you get paid, there's a higher duty. But again, the case
law... That typically is an agent. An agent is going to be paid for advice and information to the insured, correct?
Or it could be USAA. They have people in-house that you can pay them to give additional advice.
Is that what happened in McHugh? Was that you said that was a licensed agent for McHugh?
It was an employee
within McHugh.
Right, and that's the same situation here. We have employees employed by USAA who are all licensed agents. So, I mean, I think that's frankly a red herring. I don't see there's any difference in the law as far as whether or not an insurer can be held liable under special circumstances versus just an agent. And I think the law was clear that, and the court even said that, it's just not required. It can be an insurance company as well.
Okay.
That's all opposition. That's just a question of fact, and I think the judge should have let this go to the jury.
Thank you.
Thank you.
May it please the court, my name is Ronald Harding, and I'm here on behalf of USAA Casualty Insurance Company. I think Justice Grasso's first question hits the mark in this case. I keep on hearing about special circumstances, but the joinder to that is special circumstances of specific representations or assertions that are then relied upon. What this record is devoid of is any specific representation or assertion made by the insurer in this case to their insured concerning the adequacy of their automobile insurance, the adequacy of their underinsured, or the lack of their having underinsured coverage. In fact, the plaintiff herself, and it was the plaintiff, Mrs. Callback, Dr. Callback, who dealt with insurance on behalf of the family, testified, and it's in the record appendix at 841, that she did not recall having any conversation with USAA regarding the types of coverage she had on her automobile policy or having such a conversation about the types of coverage that were available to her under that policy.
What about your brother's argument that she had a conversation, is there anything more I need, or am I all set? Or?
Well, to the extent her self-serving affidavit contradicts her deposition testimony, I think her self-serving affidavit is trumped by what she testified to under oath months earlier, which is at odds because she testified directly that she never had any conversation about available coverage. She testified directly that she never talked with USAA about her underinsured coverage or the lack thereof. I don't think general conversations which do not result in an affirmative statement by the insurer become actionable as a special circumstance. Should I, Mr. Insurance Company, have any other kind of insurance, and the insurance company doesn't answer, I don't think that becomes actionable because the insurance company is not taking steps to investigate the personal situation of that insured and then give advice as to the coverage that they should have. This case is similar in a lot of respects to this court's unpublished opinion Technical Papers, where the insurers in that case had a myriad of policies with Liberty Mutual for over a 50-year period. There then became an issue as to whether or not there was adequacy of coverage. And the claim in that case was, look, we had this 50-year relationship with you. We had liability coverage, excess coverage, workers' comp insurance, personal property insurance, automobile insurance. And you never once told us that the limits of liability on our building were adequate. You sent us all this promotional material over the years saying you're there for us, you're going to take care of us, you're a wonderful company, we're going to make sure your needs are met. And this court said in that case the same thing that it should say here, that those sorts of things do not amount to a specific assertion or representation which takes you out of what we all know to be the usual rule that an insurance company has no obligation to inform or advise its insured of the types of policies that it sells, of what coverages are adequate, whether or not their coverage is adequate, whether they can purchase under insurance or not. There's not that obligation. The court, and I think the plaintiff concedes that in his brief, in fact, that is the operative law. And I think this case ends on that law because that is where we start, and in the absence of any specific evidence of an actionable assertion or representation by the insurer, you don't even get to consider whether or not there's a factual issue as to special circumstances. And I think that is exactly what the trial judge here did. He said that there is no evidence to send to a jury here. And when you look at the cases that are cited, frankly, most of them are decided on either directed verdicts or a numerous of them on summary judgments, several of which were sustained by appellate courts, including the First Circuit in the AGA case, which again was a summary judgment. The First Circuit said that there was nothing done despite the long relationship by the insurer to inform its insurers or to undertake to advise its insured that their coverage was adequate. And absent that, the case is over. Moreover, although not argued by the plaintiff and not relied upon by the motion judge below, the law in Massachusetts has always been that a policy of insurance is a contract. And with respect to contracts and with respect to insurance policies, that contract is formed when you get the writing and when you pay for it. And thus, the SJC, beginning way back in the beginning of the prior century in the Long case, said that once you get that contract, once you pay for that coverage, you're buying what you're getting.
Isn't that a different question altogether as to whether or not how much they bought or how much it covers? And doesn't that beg the question whether the company was negligent in failing to advise her about getting underinsured coverage?
Well, I think the law is the opposite, with all due respect. I think the law is that the insurance company has no obligation to advise.
Well, I know. That's your point, but that's a point of tort law, not contract law. So it's a separate question from whether or not you're stuck, isn't it?
Well, I think it's a little different because I don't think the tort law is going to trump the contract law. What the plaintiff is saying here, in essence, is let's open up the floodgates to litigation. Let's let every person who buys an insurance policy someday later to come back.
I'm not worried about every person. I'm just dealing with people to whom specific representations were made. They say, we don't need the coverage. We're not going to get it. Contract comes. They look at it and say, oh, yeah, that's what we agreed to. They're stopped.
Well, I think that they are stopped unless they can prove that there was that representation.
Oh, yeah, no, I agree.
We are going to give you that.
It begs the question.
We're going to give you that. Well, you know what? I think that some of the cases that are cited in my brief may even go the other way. But I think they were decided before perhaps the notion of special circumstances came into fruition. But I know there's at least one case in which the insured specifically requested under insurance of $100,000 coverage. The policy was issued. The policy didn't have $100,000 coverage. It had something less than that amount of coverage, and the U.S. District Court, I think it might have been Judge Gorton, and the case is cited in my brief, said, sorry, even though you requested it, the policy was delivered, mm-hmm. The policy had 25 coverage in it. I don't care that you asked for 100, you got
that.
The policy. Yeah. And okay. If you had a problem with the policy, it was your obligation then.
But that's not this case.
Well, if the plaintiffs are saying, in fact, I should have under insurance coverage.
No, what they're saying is you should have told me I should have it.
Well, they get the policy each and every year. It's in the record appendix. Yeah. They get the declarations page. There's a big blank there. The onus is on the insured to then say to the company, hey, I have this big blank there. What does this mean, and should I have that? That never happened here. Had they done that, then maybe the plaintiff would have something to talk about. But having not done that, having been silent, I believe that the motion judge was correct. Thank you.
Thank you.